Today's episode is supported by supplement innovators, Bioptimizers. They have been optimizing humans for decades. Later in the show, I'll tell you how their signature supplement can change your whole sleep game. For the best sex of your life, optimize your health. For the best health, optimize your sex life. Better sex and deeper intimate connections are the key to boosting immunity, longevity, and happiness. In fact, regular orgasms can increase your lifespan by up to 8 years. And today's guest has the erotic blueprint you need to make sure that you're satisfied in the bedroom and get all the health benefits it has to offer.
My partner and I had been together for 6.5 years before I found out he was kinky. And we were really struggling at the time. We don't know who we are erotically, so how are we even going to communicate what we need, what we desire? We have shame about what we desire. The 5 erotic blueprints were something that I created so that people could understand who they were erotically and have a language to communicate who they were erotically. We live longer. The better our sex life is, the more orgasms we're having. We need to innovate. And if we stop innovating within our relationship, things get stagnant and stale. So now I just lay some red ropes on the bed and we're off to the races.
Welcome to the Health Optimization Podcast. I'm Tim Gray, the UK's leading biohacker. This podcast is all about gaining actionable advice from the world's top experts and sharing new breakthroughs in nature, biohacking, technology, and longevity research to help you live longer and happier. Everything I cover on this podcast are the things I've learned from the world's top medical professionals, researchers, scientists, and authors in the health field. However, I'm none of those things. I'm just someone with a very keen mind for figuring out how to be as healthy as possible while aging gracefully and learning from the best. My only bias is health. Are you having great sex? If not, why not? People report everything from not feeling satisfied when they get intimate to simply not having sex often enough. But since a good sex life offers so many benefits to your physical and mental health, as health optimizers, we can't afford to ignore perfecting the art. Jaya is an award-winning somatic sexologist who teaches people how to create their most satisfying sex lives and has helped thousands of people transform their relationships. She spent the past 3 decades studying turn-ons, ancient erotic rituals, tantric sex, and the biology and psychology of attraction and sexual fulfillment, all so we can learn to be better lovers and have better health. You may have seen her on Netflix Sex, Love & Goop with Gwyneth Paltrow. She's also just released a book called Your Blueprint for Pleasure. In it, she helps you figure out your erotic personality type, which I can't wait to discuss. Jaya, welcome to the show.
It is such a pleasure to be here.
So let's just jump straight in. So what got you so invested in sex and improving people's sex lives?
I think it's an area in the world where we have a lot of ignorance and a lot of misinformation and lack of education, and we aren't allowed to talk about it, and it's taboo. And I've always had this passion for bringing healing to this area and light and conversation so that we can get it out of the darkness and into the place where I think sexuality is most profound, which is using it as a tool for our health, longevity, and personal awakening.
So what exactly is a somatic sexologist?
So a somatic sexologist is someone who looks at sexuality from the body, from soma. Soma means the body, somatic, in the body. Sex isn't just something that happens in our heads or as a thought. It brings thoughts. It brings emotion that can enhance sexuality, but it's something that happens in our bodies. And so a somatic sexologist is someone who's looking and studying sexuality and teaching sexuality from not just the viewpoint of the mind or the emotions, but also from the body. And I also like to look at it holistically. It's not just the body. It actually is this whole system, our biochemistry, our thoughts, our emotions, and the body. And so as a sexologist, as a somatic sexologist, I'm looking at it from our wholeness, from all of the angles, and coming from that perspective.
So how does better sex boost our immunity, longevity, and happiness? And what are the health benefits of having good sex?
There are many health benefits from having a great sex life. I think one of the big things is just somebody seeing your body. And in seeing your body, they can see changes that may be something to report, like a strange mole on your back that could be cancerous. Or the health of, there's actually research that shows that the healthier you are in terms of partnership and in terms of a healthy sex life, in that health, what it's bringing to you longevity wise is that you have a higher immune system. Your hormones, your sex hormones, which are your youth hormones, are staying juicier and more aliveness there. And then overall emotional health. So being in partnership, having a longevity of a sex life, but we don't need to have just a relationship for sexuality as well. There's our own personal sexuality that we have with our own bodies. And that, again, can be a practice. Every day I have a practice. I have my O vitamin every day. And that is boosting my neurochemistry. It's boosting my sex hormones. It's bringing radiance and aliveness to me. And so having those practices, again, immune system, immune function, noticing if something's changing in our bodies, our youth hormones, our sex hormones. And then there is research that says that we live longer. The better our sex life is, the more orgasms we're having, the length of our life actually increases. Mm. And maybe because we're getting less sick, but also I think because there's a happiness quotient. You know, when we feel good, we want to stick around.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite funny, isn't it? I think I heard the saying, if you're not healthy, you're not horny. Or if you're not horny, you're not healthy. And it's actually very interesting. I mean, I think if we think about evolutional science, and if we weren't horny or, reproducing, then often we're dealing with too many threats or in a war zone. I mean, in a war zone, you can't mate. I mean, you'd have to be a very interesting human to be able to. So when we have stressed lives or adrenal fatigue or any of these things, and you're no longer horny, I mean, it's a big indicator for the overall system, isn't it?
Yes. So our sexual health is a big sign for our overall health. So if you're noticing things like erectile dysfunction or lack of libido, that is often a first sign that there's something going on in the overall health, like heart health linked to erectile function or low libido linked to lower testosterone or hormone levels that are off or neurotransmitter levels that are off. And I think it's also really interesting, this piece about stress that you mentioned. And the research on that's fascinating. 80% of people, when they're stressed or they're feeling fatigued, do not want to have sex. But there's that 20% that actually get rejuvenated. They feel stressed and then they have sex and then they get rejuvenated from the sex and they feel less stress. And so when we talk about the blueprints, there's a certain type that when they get stressed, the more sex they have, the better they want to have sex and the better that they feel. And I'm one of those. I'm one of the 20% that when I'm in high stress, having sex helps me to, I want to have sex. I have a higher libido. I get horny, as you say. And that's all, you know, that's again, only 20% of the population.
So what is an O vitamin?
The O vitamin is a daily orgasm. So am I having a daily orgasm? And I think even defining that, I think these definitions that we have around sexuality are very limited in our world, and we don't really recognize what's possible. So for me, there's a difference between a climax, which can feel much more like a genital sneeze. It's like the tip of the iceberg of what's possible when it comes to our pleasure and eroticism. An orgasm is a longer state of pleasure. And then there's actually living in an orgasmic state. What is the state in which we're living? Is it a state of consciousness where things are beautiful and pleasurable and life is wonderful? Or is it a very different state, maybe the opposite state that a lot of people live in, especially in our world today where it feels like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with the world? You know, what's the point of having my orgasms or sex with the way that the world is? And I like to think differently, because that O vitamin then feeds you to see the world in a very different way. And when we're fueled and we're resourced, then we can go out and make changes and shifts on this planet that we want to make.
So can you achieve that orgasmic state on your own, or does it require a partner?
Does not require a partner. No partner required at all for orgasmic states or O vitamins. I have a personal pleasure practice. So every morning I get up and I think about what is it that I want to do to bring pleasure to my body. Maybe that's movement or self-touch or breath work, with all three of those combined, which is a very tantric, way of doing things. How am I utilizing that sexual energy? And so that may be setting an intention for my day in the morning, doing some self-massage. Maybe that is having an orgasm or a climax as part of it as well. but that can look very different depending upon what my intention is for the day and what I'm setting out to do. So like, for example, I knew I was coming on this podcast today. And so what are the things that I can do to start to prepare for that so that I'm transmitting to the world this message of pleasure as giving people permission to have pleasure in their lives as a healthful thing.
Amazing. Amazing. So tell me why so many people struggle with intimacy and feeling satisfied in the bedroom.
I think the first piece is lack of education. We don't have enough education on how to create longevity. We don't have enough support on how to create longevity and intimacy. I think another big piece is we don't know who we are. We don't know who we are erotically. So how are we even going to communicate what we need, what we desire? We have shame about what we desire. So then there's that again, lack of communication, like, oh gosh, I want this thing in the bedroom, but I can't tell my partner. And so we also lack curiosity because of the shame piece around sexuality. And in lacking curiosity, it doesn't breed intimacy, because instead of getting curious, we create separation and we create judgments instead of curiosity oftentimes. So like, oh God, my partner likes that sexual thing. And then you create all kinds of stories and judgments in your mind about that. And now you've created separation versus intimacy, as opposed to getting curious and going, well, tell me more about that. Tell me what about that excites you. Tell me what turns you on about whatever XYZ taboo thing that turns them on. And I think we also get tripped up in this conversation around sexuality, that if our partner has a fantasy or a desire or something that's showing up, it means that we have to be the one delivering that thing, as opposed to having a conversation and getting curious about that thing and understanding what's underneath that desire, especially if it's a taboo desire. What's underneath that fantasy? What's underneath that I am a yes to, that I could provide to my partner, or maybe they could provide to themselves and I would be open and a yes to that. So I think there's a lack of conversation that is an intimate conversation that breeds intimacy, and then the shame and the lack of education, again, pointing back to that.
I really love how you said, why is it that turns you on? What is it about that you like? Like, tell me more. So I guess then you understand the theme and then it just becomes more open and connected sex, opposed to, I like this, oh, I don't. You know, which is one's closed and one's open. And I think it's fantastic. And the difference, you know, I wished I'd known this for the last 30 years. I really do, because, you know, it makes such a huge difference, just that level of judgment. And I think, you know, I've studied a lot in the masculine and feminine side of things in the last couple of years, actually more like 3 or 4 years. And from various different authors, David Deeder and John Gray and a few of the others in between. And one thing I came to realize in this judgment is that if your woman, and I'm speaking as a guy obviously now, if your woman accepts you as a man and trusts your judgment and is surrendered into her feminine and not trying to fight for the masculine position, then that judgment goes. A lot of the time anyway. And the same the other way around. If the husband or the man respects the woman and understands that you are both sexual creatures and accepts her fully, then there's no judgment around sex and let's just enjoy this world together. And that might be going to fun fairs or it might be having amazing sex. It's like, it's very interesting dynamic of acceptance.
Yes. And then, the word. Are you willing to accept the person in front of you? Because that's intimacy, not a projected idea of who they are, not trying to change, fix, or improve them. And when we're in acceptance of the person who's in front of us and willing to love them unconditionally, there's nothing they need to be, do, or have in order to be loved by us. That's the ultimate intimacy right there. And I'll go even a step further, which is I had a lover who was like, not only do I accept all of you, I want all of you. Oh my God, that was so sexy. Like, all of you is welcome here. Every bit of you, you know, your rage is welcome here. Your sexuality is welcome here. Your sadness is welcome here. Your joy is welcome here. And in that, I get to be the fullness of all that I am and pour the fullness of all that I am. And there's no part of me that's hiding. And that is intimacy.
I love that.
That is intimacy.
I love that. I really love that. I mean, that's like, that's freedom, isn't it? And that's what a relationship and a sexual relationship should be like, complete freedom to explore. How do you get rid of shame around sex? How do you have those conversations with your partner who perhaps hasn't heard this podcast?
Yeah. I think that one place to start is creating safety. The big piece is with shame. We don't feel safe to reveal the things we're ashamed about. We're afraid of being judged. We're afraid of losing love. We're afraid of losing the partnership that we have. So that reassurance is one of the first things that you can bring is your shame is safe with me. The things you're about to reveal are safe with me. And to really mean that, if they're not safe with you, then it's good to get a third party to actually help the two of you navigate the things that are coming up. And so that bit of what would help you feel safe to have me hold you in that place of shame. And then there's also just your own personal work without your partner. If you're experiencing shame, and you're listening to this, but if your partner, isn't hearing this, I say, blame it on Jaya. Bring me up. Say, I heard this woman, Jaya, on this great podcast and they were talking about sexual shame. And I would love to know what would help you feel safe to have a conversation about that. So that's with your partner. Now, if you're the one who's experiencing shame, this is a journey and it's that first choice to go on the journey of understanding your sexual shame and where did it come from? Now we could look at the past all day long. I really love to understand the past, understand where my shame came from. And in our culture, there's so many places where it comes from because we're getting the messaging all the time to be ashamed, based on gender, based upon who we decide we are sexually oriented and who we are sexually, there's some aspect somewhere within culture that brings us some kind of shame. And so I don't think any of us really escape it, but some of us have done our work around it so that we are erotically free and we're erotically empowered and we're erotically awakened. So if you want to go on that journey, I think one of the first steps is one, understanding the conditioning and programming. It's not you. Oftentimes this shame is something that's conditioned. It's something that's programmed. And it's good to unravel that, to recognize that thing that happened in third grade, that wasn't me. That isn't true. That's something that happened in the past. And so looking at those things, but then also how do you free yourself from the shame right now? And that right now moment is looking at what part of me, and I think that this is IFS work is really, really great, internal family systems. But I also learned something called focusing, which helps you identify the part of you, similar to IFS, the part of you that is feeling shame. Because there's another part of you that wants empowerment. There's another part of you that's free. So what's that aspect of you that experiences sexual shame? And what are their concerns? Maybe write in a journal, here are all the concerns of this part of me. Oh gosh, if I get rid of the shame, something bad's going to happen. I'm going to be a sex freak or I hear that one a lot. If I really let go of this shame, I'm going to be wild. And there's all this fear of what might happen there. So underneath the shame, there's another part that's afraid that I'm going to be out of control sexually, which isn't true. We have something in our brain called the dual control model of response sexually, and it is constantly scanning for what is sexually relevant. And what it does all day long is it either puts the brakes on if you were a car, no, don't have sex right now. You're talking on a podcast. That's not the appropriate time to be having an orgasm. Maybe it is. But and then the other part of the brain, which was my maybe it is the accelerator. Part of it's the turn on, it's the arousal. And your brain is doing this all day long, brakes, accelerator, based upon what you've decided is sexually relevant. Now, some of us have too much brakes on top of the emergency brake in our car because of trauma, because of past history. And that's where that shame comes up that's there that says, I'm bad for being sexual. And that's something to unravel, that part of you that feels like you are bad because of being sexual. Now, some of us have no brakes and too much accelerator, and that's where we get sexual compulsion, and that's where we get, people use the word addiction. I don't love the word sex addiction. I prefer compulsion, where we get things like inappropriate sexual activity. And so in that, it's good to have a healthy balance between these different aspects of ourselves and what's healthy for you. And if shame is preventing you from a healthy sex life, then that would be about taking some of the brakes off by identifying, naming that part of you, recognizing that part of you, and then seeing the part of you that is more the accelerator and allowing that part to develop, cultivate, and come out of the closet and trusting that there's always going to be a part of you that will, you know, accelerate or brakes. That's healthy.
I love that. It's you actually, while you were saying that, it's so unbelievably spot on from my model of the world as well. It's like my whole life I've been ashamed of sex. I couldn't even watch a panty liner advert with my mum in the same room without being beyond embarrassed when I was a kid. And, you know, all the way through my life, I wanted my mother to think I'm completely sexless. And, you know, for some reason, I couldn't figure it out. And then one day I realized my mum is super religious and there's no sex before marriage. And it's that it should be, you know, maybe with one or two people in your whole life. And that should be in marriage and you shouldn't have this type of thing with people. So of course, hide it, push it down, shame. So of course, you know, if there's masturbation or if there's sexual partner, having sex with a partner or whatever, it's always like, oh, can't talk about that. That's like not something that I should have in my life. And yet when I realized this, I learned to be able to let go of it and realize that actually that's just something that's installed in me. That's not my belief set. Although I do believe in sharing it with the right people and not just hookup culture, sleeping with as many people as you can for your ego or for validation. But I do think that choosing the right partner and doing it in between. So it's amazing letting go of that shame and it's very liberating. So what you described about the shame actually hits home very, very hard.
I love something that you said there just about this piece of the programming, right? It was installed in you. And I think that that's when we find those that and recognize that it leads to this liberation.
Mm.
And so exactly what you said, like if we want to liberate ourselves erotically and free ourselves and awaken ourselves, it is about letting go of those installations and recognizing it's not serving you. It was an adaptation that you made in order to feel like you were still loved when you were young, or an adaptation to an adverse situation, like a trauma that you made. And that adaptation isn't serving you anymore. You're an adult now.
Now we know that if we don't look after our health, we can struggle with low libido. So do some people need to work on their health on top of all of this?
Absolutely. So there are four key pieces when it comes to our sexual health that we need to look at. And I think that in order to optimize our sexuality, we all should be looking at this. But those people who are really struggling with some kind of health issue, I like to look at these four areas, especially around sexual health. So the first one is looking at our biochemistry, what's happening in your hormones and how is that affecting your sexuality? And so libido, if your testosterone's low, you know, if your estrogen is converting into testosterone, if your testosterone's converting into estrogen, these are some of the things that we want to be looking at just biochemically. And then there's also the chemistry between you and your partner and what's happening on that biochemical layer as well. Cause that can, those are also indicators, like if you're taking birth control and then you go off of it, that can affect how you're feeling towards your partner and attraction. There was actually a study done called the T-shirt study. There's a cranial nerve in your nose called cranial nerve zero, and it smells the pheromones of your partner and it goes right to the sex center of the brain, which I think is fascinating. And so women who were on birth control couldn't smell that. So then you go off of that and then all of a sudden you've lost attraction for your partner. It's because of the way that the brain is picking up the pheromones and reading the immune system of your partner, because when your immune systems come together, then you're creating the best possible immune system in your offspring. So just like fascinating little things like that in biochemistry. So biochemistry. And then the next one is physically what's happening, like biomechanically. Have you lost flexibility? Is there a tear in your pelvic floor? Is there, you know, tight musculature? And these are things that we want to look at because that could be affecting blood flow. And that can be affecting libido too. If you're, you know, in pain. Pain is not, you know, like, it's like, don't have sex when you're in pain that frequently, or if you're having vaginal pain because you had a baby and there's a tear or scar tissue. Like scar tissue is something that's completely overlooked when it comes to our physical health and libido and how that affects things, especially scar tissue in the midline. Then we're looking also at the psyche-emotional realm, which you and I have been talking about a lot, because that can affect our health and libido. You know, if you're feeling depressed, if your neurotransmitters, again, like the neurochemicals are affecting mood, that can affect. And then the final one is the bioenergetics. And I mentioned scar tissue, but scar tissue in the midline runs through this governing vessel here, which can affect also the flow of sexual energy through the body. And we're bioenergetic and bioelectrical before we're any of the others. And so even just on the cellular level, what's happening, I think is also fascinating. So always looking at those four things when it comes to any sexual health challenge. And, you know, so if you're feeling that low libido, maybe it's one of these four things, or maybe it's a combination and they're affecting each other.
Magnesium operates over 600 different biochemical reactions in your body. Sleep is one of the most important. With my extensive travel and work all over the world, my stress levels jump when my sleep is disrupted. And the longer it takes for me to fall asleep at night, the more stressed out I get about being exhausted the next day. It's a vicious cycle, but that's why I've been taking Magnesium Breakthrough. It gives me all seven types of magnesium my body needs in one formulation. I'm able to fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and have more restful nights. And when I'm sleeping better, my stress goes down and my energy levels go up. My life seems to be a lot more manageable. I want that for you too. Check out Magnesium Breakthrough at bioptimizers.com/Tim Biohacker. Use the code TimBiohacker to save 10%. You can find the link in the show notes. Remember, if you want to learn how to take control of your health and you're sick of traditional healthcare and temporary fixes, you should come to the Health Optimization Summit. You can join other like-minded enthusiasts and meet the world's leading minds in health, wellness, and science. You can even test out a load of groundbreaking health tech and latest supplements. Get your tickets at healthoptimization.com. So, can you tell me about your blueprint for pleasure and the five personality types that you lay out in your new book?
Yeah, your blueprint for pleasure. So this is my new book, and I wrote it because I really felt like I was on a mission to help people liberate themselves sexually. I mean, what we've been talking about from the conditioning and the programming, and the first step is to know yourself. And also, I see so many mismatched relationships. They think they're mismatched. And so I kind of want to bust a myth here as we go into these five erotic blueprints, because so many people come to me like, oh, my partner likes this and I like that, and I think we're doomed and we just aren't meant to be together. Or they have more sex drive than I do. And how do we come together in all of this? Because we feel like we're so different. And I don't think that it's necessarily that we have sexual incompatibility. I think that that's a mythology. There is a little bit, sometimes there can be incompatibility, but I think that it actually comes down to willingness. Are you willing to learn? Are you willing to go on the journey? Are you willing to uncover your shame and heal? Are you willing to do these things with your partner or on your own? And if you're willing, then there's solution. And if you're unwilling, then that's a different conversation. So, or your partner's unwilling. That, I think it really comes down not to compatibility, but it comes down to willingness. And so the five erotic blueprints were something that I created so that people could understand who they were erotically and have a language to communicate who they were erotically to other people so that we could create more intimacy and connection in life versus this idea that we're incompatible and therefore doomed, or we should be separate because we're two different erotic beings.
So tell us more about these sexual types then.
Great. So there's five erotic types. And the first one is an energetic. The energetic is someone who's turned on by anticipation, space, longing. They love to yearn for the sexual experience and for their partner, or for an erotic experience with themselves. So the more spaciousness you give them, the more their eroticism can flower. On the shadow side, however, they're often seen as frigid or overly sensitive, because too much, too quick, too fast can turn them off. And if you're going too much on the physical body, they can dissociate from the physical body. They're the type that often struggles with the most trauma, but that trauma also has made them beautifully sensitive. Their sensitivity is actually not a shadow. Their sensitivity is actually a superpower, because you can do very little. It's like dipping your finger in a pool of still water and watching the ripples go. And those ripples can just be these orgasmic delights. It doesn't take a lot of, you know, kind of type stuff. For people who can't see me, I was just rubbing a clitoris and stroking something.
I love you. I love you. This is brilliant.
So yeah, so that's an energetic. And they can have orgasms without even being touched. Like, they can just have orgasms from the energy, from so much anticipation, and finally having that moment of touch, from their mind, from tantra. You know, some of these sacred sexual practices are very powerful for an energetic. The next one is the sensual. And the sensual is someone who's turned on by all of their senses being ignited. So this is touch. This is that delicious piece of chocolate melting in their mouth. This is the music and the environment, the way the environment looks, the beauty. They bring the beauty to sex, and that's part of their superpower, is bringing the beauty to the sexual experience. The erotic arts is the sensual. And so the sensual can have orgasms that are non-genital, so other places of their body. I often say sensuals love crevice sex. So the crook of the elbow, which actually has a name, it's called the vagina. And the other part is called the weenus, which I think is hilarious. So, you know, you can play in the crevices of someone's body if they're a sensual, and they can feel a lot of turn on or even have orgasms in those areas. On the shadow side, the sensual gets caught up in their head and is often having a hard time actually getting in the body with where all their eroticism is, because they're thinking of their to-do list or the crooked pillow in the corner or their partner's breath. They're distracted by all of the things in life, you know, the work. This is the blueprint that's the most likely that when they're stressed, they're going to be turned off. Stress is just like kryptonite to a sensual. You ready for the next one?
I'm going to let you roll through.
Okay. So go for it is perfect for a sexual. The sexual is someone who likes to do sex the way we think of sex in our culture. So this is penetration. This is getting to the climax. And the sexual is the type that when they're stressed, they want to have sex, because sex is the thing that makes them feel like everything is right in the world. Sex is the thing that de-stresses them and down-regulates them. And it's also the thing that has them feel loved and appreciated in life. And for them, sex is penetration. It is intercourse oftentimes and getting to that climax. If everybody's having an orgasm and you've had penetration, then it feels like that is the way that sex is supposed to be. Superpower of the sexual is that sex is joyous. Sex is easy. It has an ease-filledness to it. It's like, yeah, we've had an orgasm and we've had intercourse. Everything's right. And so they often in their shadow side will be like, what's wrong with the rest of you? Like, why do you need to have, you know, chocolate and candles and great music, you know, like, why do we, wait a minute, not touch you, you know, to the energetics. I see a lot of energetics with sexuals and relationship. And it's really challenging because for the sexual to really understand that not touching you can make you have an orgasm, because you know? They're so physical. They're so about the body. Mm. And also the sexuals can miss the journey. You know, there's all this other aspect of sexuality that's so big. And the sexuals have this very, very limited definition of what sex is.
One thing I just want to jump in here with is that an ex of mine once said to me, Tim, you're too performance-based, right? And at the time I was like, but you want a guy that's performance, really? And I was just like, I took it as a bit of an insult. And it took me until I met my ex-girlfriend that, you know, was a very, very different relationship for me. And I realized actually performance is about the end goal. So Are you focused on getting either of you to come versus actually just enjoying the journey and building it and building it and building it? And it's almost like a dance. And in fact, you know, I did in a country where it was legal and it was prescribed and all this lot, MDMA in my relationship, and we had sex. And it was just so incredible of how it changed the whole way that we connected and the sex. And it actually opened my eyes significantly from, let's just enjoy every little touch, every little breath, everything from top to bottom, and not worry about the end. And obviously when you have MDMA in your system, you know, the end is very difficult for both parties anyway. but the thing is, and in that moment I realized, yes, I was performance-based. And I have to let go of that shit. I guess that fits into that archetype that you've just mentioned, I guess, partly.
Yeah, because the sexual is too focused on the end goal oftentimes when they're in their shadow side. And then they're missing the presence with their partner. They're missing the moments because they're in the future often trying to accomplish something, you know, which can also be lovely if you're learning and you're in a certain phase of your sexuality. But I love, you know, that you mentioned MDMA and psychedelics, because I think that one of the things that they can bring us is a shift in perspective, like you had. You know, MDMA is very sensual. If I were to give it a blueprint, you know, it's much more sensual, energetic. And it taught you. It said, oh, here's what sensual looks like. It's like being in the moment, being in the sensation of all the things that are happening in this moment. And that's very much how a sensual operates in the world. So I'm so glad you had that experience.
Mm. I did the same with ketamine as well, which was slightly different, but also amazing because the dose was very precise. But yeah, that was a fantastic, it's not what I expected from ketamine. I thought it'd be very disassociative, but in fact, it brings you into your body. And I'm not condoning the use of drugs and sex, by the way, guys. And obviously that pairs with rock and roll, but the point is, I mean, I'm a biohacker. I like to explore these things and also, you know, shifting my consciousness and always growing. And I think these, right. You know, these were two things that I did that really shifted my perception of sex, my reality of sex, and the whole journey as well. So it's really interesting to hear this from you. Okay, so what's the next type?
So the next type is the kinky, and the kinky is someone who's turned on by the taboo. And I loved this definition of the taboo as anything that is taboo for you. So if it has been something that's naughty or something you're feeling shame or guilt about, then maybe that piece that's taboo is a turn on. So sometimes if it's something we're not supposed to be doing, it's the turn on. And that's really what defines kinky and someone who's kinky. There are two different types within this. Some people are more sensation-based, meaning they like impact. So that could be some kind of intense sensation like spanking, or that it's something like a psychological game. Like I'm giving you power over me and I'm surrendering to you and I'm going to let you boss me around in the bedroom. That also could be kinky. And that could also feel very taboo, especially if it's something like I'm not supposed to give my power over to you and allow you to dominate me in the bedroom. If that feels edgy, then that is kinky for you. So power games and psychology games, which can be really, really hot, or impact, which can be really, really hot. And some people are both. So I'll tell a little story from my own personal life. Now that we've gotten to this blueprint, my partner and I had been together for 6.5 years before I found out he was kinky. And we were really struggling at the time. You know, we'd had a baby, we'd gone through a lot of just life experiences. And I couldn't quite, I'm a sexologist and I'm like doing all the sexual blueprinted things that should turn a man on. And I'm putting quotes around all of that because even as a sexologist, I still didn't have these blueprints at that time. And I was like, what is wrong with my partner? I kept thinking there's something wrong with him, which is a common thing that a sexual can think. There's something wrong with everybody else. Because I'm doing all the sexual things that society says I should be doing. So I'm doing striptease for him. You know, I'm coming to bed and initiating sex, but I'm initiating always in the sexual. I'm touching his genitals. I'm saying like, let's have sex. And he just kept turning me down and turning me down. And I'd cry myself to sleep at night because I couldn't quite figure out. Like, I was like, is he not attracted to me anymore since I've had a baby? You know, my mind's reeling in all of these things. Like, does he love me still? You know, we're having conversations and he's saying he's attracted to me and he's saying that he loves me, but the physicality in the bedroom isn't happening. And for a sexual, if that's not happening, something's really, really wrong. And he'd cuddle with me at night and I'd roll my eyes because to me, that's not sexual. I'm not a sensual blueprint. I'm highest in sexual blueprint. And then we start to explore and I start to have these ahas about these five blueprints. And it turns out that he's highly kinky. And I was approaching, and he's zero sexual on our quiz. And I'm zero kinky on the quiz. So here we are, like just completely missing each other because we're speaking completely different erotic. I'm speaking sexual, which is the language that I know how to speak and that I think men should speak because of gender stereotypes that I had at the time. And then he's speaking sensual because he has shame about his kinkiness. And that man is so kinky. And we like can't even find his edges. He's so kinky. Like I've sent him all over the place trying to figure out, you know, like where's the end of this kinkiness? And so like every year he kind of comes out. Every year he kind of comes out even more. It's like this peeling away of the shame about what turns him on erotically. So now I just lay some red ropes on the bed and we're off to the races.
I love that.
I love that. It's amazing, isn't it, how psychology and typing people in different ways, which gives us a heuristic, really helps us connect and communicate. I mean, I think similar with Myers-Briggs is one of those Myers-Briggs tests. It's like, actually, it's great if you understand it because you get a better understanding of this person and what they need and the language that they speak and need to hear. And I think this is one thing that really, you know, resonated with me when I was looking through. And I've done a lot of typing, a lot of psychology for the last 20 years. But in terms of the sexual types, I was just like, this is genius. Because but that's a classic example of, you know, like, for instance, in NLP, they say, you know, it's quite manipulative and whatnot. But I say it's good for me, but better for you, because you can then understand how what someone needs and to make them feel more comfortable or make them feel more accepted and speak their language, you know, because we can have the same words and mean something different still. And, you know, absolutely, this is where big communication problems happen. So it's really nice that, I'll call them the archetypes, lay out these different types and let you understand which one you're nearest to and align and understand and accept. But I guess it comes back to the acceptance piece again, because if you do have a partner that is super, super, super kinky, you know, you have to accept that man to be able to peel the layers of the onion and let him be his true self. So it's a very interesting finding there. And I mean, obviously it's a real bonus that you found out, but six years is a long time, I bet. I mean, like, all the fun that we've been missing.
Right? Yeah. And so interesting that here I am a sexologist and this is what I do for a living. And it took us six. I mean, I knew all the sex techniques. I'm like mastery of all these techniques, and they're mostly sexual blueprinted techniques. So it wasn't working for my partner, and that aha. And then also understanding that kinky blueprint, like the superpowers of the creativity within that blueprint. Like, I could learn about kinky for the rest of my life and never learn all the fun things. I mean, just rope ties, you know, like you could geek out completely on all of these different things that there are out there to explore. And I think that that's one of the superpowers, is this creativity. And then also there's research that shows there's actually like mental healthiness, which I think a lot of people think that that's the opposite. You know, like, oh, there must be something wrong with you if you like kink. And I remember Ian and I learning when we were first learning about all of this, and he kept asking that question, why is there something wrong with me? Why am I like this? And one of the practitioners we went to, he said, you know, why don't you just stop asking why you're like this and start enjoying it? And that was some of the best advice that we got, because that shadow side of the kinky is deep, deep shame. They're the blueprint most likely to deal with shame, because they have an out of the box sexuality, or what they're judging in their own minds is out of the box or taboo that they shouldn't be doing.
What can people do to work out which one of the blueprint they are?
Yeah. So different ways that you can come up with what blueprint type you are. One is, there's a quiz online that we've made, and I really honed this quiz over many years. It took me 5 years before I even started talking about the erotic blueprints. And, you know, so many things in my life have come out of solving my own problems. I mentioned with Ian, my partner Ian and I, you know, and so this was like looking at like, well, how can I help people type themselves without having to learn somatics? As we mentioned at the beginning, this body-based somatic sexology. And so the quiz really came from that, but it is the mind answering the questions. So another way that you can determine the blueprints, and I write about this in the book too, is by playing different somatic games. So one is like, you know, when you go to the eye doctor and they're like, here's A and then here's B, which one can you see better with? It's a similar concept. So here's an energetic touch, for example. Right now, for those of you who can't see me, I am touching my arm with my fingertips, just barely touching the hairs on my arm. That would be an energetic touch. And I might say, that's touch A. And now let's do a different touch. Let's slap my arm. That's touch B. It's kinky. You know, I'm giving myself an intense sensation. That's touch B. Which one do you prefer? And then I'd say A, because kinky, you know, kinky, I was zero. I've cultivated that now. Now I'm much more of a shapeshifter, which is the last blueprint, if you want to talk about that one. So the shapeshifter is someone who's turned on by all of it. If you've heard yourself in all the blueprints I've talked about so far, it's like, I want it all. I love it all. This is me. I am insatiable in my sexuality. And people who are sexual shapeshifters, this is, you know, most of us have like two primary ones. Some of us, you know, we have different percentages of all of these within us. but some people are more lean toward one than the other as a primary. But oftentimes shapeshifters come with one they kind of lean toward the most. So the sexual shapeshifter is the one with the highest libido. They want it all. They want to play it all. You know, there seems to be like an insatiability to them. They're often judged. Any shapeshifter is often judged as someone who wants too much, is too complex, too demanding sometimes. And I like to break that mythology. It's just that they're the most erotically sophisticated of all of the blueprints. They have the highest erotic IQ. And so for those of us who don't have that level of our IQ, and they are amazing lovers because they can shapeshift to speak any language. It's like someone who's multilingual. They can go anywhere, you know, and be able to pick up the language and communicate with people. And so those of us who aren't shapeshifters can sometimes judge that as being too complex, that they have too much complexity. On the shadow side, the shapeshifter has been often told they're too much, so much that they start to break off aspects of themselves and they will shapeshift only to what their partner is. So if my partner is sensual, oh, I know how to do that. I'll just speak French all the time. And they get bored really easily because they do that shapeshifting into one instead of their full wide spectrum of who they are erotically. My theory over the 30 years of my practice is that we are actually all shapeshifters, but we have been conditioned and programmed to cut pieces of ourselves off or have had experienced traumas to cut experiences of ourselves off. And then we've put those away somewhere. And the blueprints actually show us where we're limited rather than showing us our full spectrum of expression erotically. And so I love that you brought up Myers-Briggs because that was part of my mission in eroticism. I love Myers-Briggs. I love the Enneagram. I love the DISC profile, like all of these personality typing tests. And I thought, you know, we don't really have one for sexuality. So it set me out also on that mission to find what that might be and to really research where are we? Who are we as erotic beings? And I think what I've seen is that who we are as erotic beings is actually a whole. It's wholeness. It's a full spectrum of eroticism. And just like the Enneagram is where I first read that was like your Enneagram type shows you where you're actually limited versus the whole spectrum of what's possible in the expression of our humanity in sexuality. And I think identity is also a really important conversation in sexuality as we're uncovering who we really are and understanding that identity is malleable. I think we get very fixed and all that a fixed identity is a viewpoint with a goal that's unfulfilled.
I love that growth mindset because we become more of what we are as we get older and more less plastic and more fixed. But in your relationship, it's really like really made me smile when you said, you know, it took us 6 years, but now we're peeling off the layer of the onion every year and he's becoming more and more kinky. And that in a relationship, it really gives me a lot of hope because instead of the dwindling, less sex, vanishing scenario that a lot of couples have, actually building it up to be bigger and bigger and bigger and better and more explorative year after year after year is actually quite an exciting thing. And I've never thought about it in that way until you said it. And I think if people read this book and, you know, as I look through the types, people think, oh, this is me. Well, how about exploring, trying to be one of the other types?
Yeah, I love what you're pointing to there, which is innovation. Just like in business or anything else in life, we need to innovate. And if we stop innovating within our relationship, things get stagnant and stale. And I also point to in the book, once you know the blueprints, once you know who you are, the next steps are to feed your blueprint, like get fed, get resourced, because a lot of people are starving, especially shapeshifters. Then to learn how to speak it so then you can speak it to another person. And it's not just the words that you use, it's the touches that you use. So you're starting to expand naturally because you're like with my partner, I had to learn to speak kinky. And that was a whole, like we did an experiment of 40 days where I dominated him and then 40 days where we switched and I was submissive to him. And we had 10 days off in the middle to do some study and we studied with coaches and we studied with experts and we did all of this stuff of like, it's kind of like biohacking, right? Of like, okay, we're going to like experiment on ourselves and really go deep and learn this. I don't recommend that for everybody, but we did 3 hours every day for 90 days of this experiment. And then after that, I was expanded into kinky. I could speak kinky. And so that's another piece of those four things to do once you know your blueprint is you expand into other blueprint territory. And that could be a secondary blueprint that you have, or it could be your partner's blueprint. but find those easy wins. And when you've expanded, it means that now that blueprint has become your turn on. Not that you just know how to speak it, but that actually you found things within that blueprint that turn you on. And then the final piece is to heal the shadow aspects of the blueprint. So we've been talking about shame. We've been talking about, you know, biochemistry. I gave you those four elements earlier, to really healing anything that's challenging you. So that, and then you can take that and turn them into optimization and actually create more longevity, because you're taking your biochemistry and your energetics and your emotions, and you're now allowing those things to be fuel for creating hot sex for the rest of your life.
So how much work needs to be done outside of the bedroom if people want to improve their sex lives?
So I think that this really depends on where you're at right now as to how much you need to do. You know, if things feel really juicy and you're not having a lot of emotional struggle, like things are good on the emotional level, then this could just be you go into the curious realm and you learn all the how-to. You know, this could be like, we don't need to go to therapy, but we need to, you know, take some courses, go to my, I found out my partner's kinky. Let's take a rope tie class, because maybe that would be something that turns them on. But if you're looking at all four layers, you know, like there's something going on in your biochemistry. You're not connecting psyche emotionally. You know, you don't understand the energetics and how energy flows in the body. And you want to learn more, you're energetic and you want to learn more about tantra. You know, you've lost flexibility in your body. Then working on your sex life outside of the bedroom is going to be more intensive. And I would say, don't overwhelm yourself. Find easy wins first. And then stack things as much as you can. You know, I mean, you're a biohacker. So like learn from people who are doing these kinds of tools, especially when it comes to libido or the biochemistry, because there are a lot of tools out there that you can start to learn to simplify it and not let yourself get too overwhelmed. Because I think a lot of times when people have like a lot of things going on and they need to do a lot outside the bedroom, they can just get overwhelmed and not do it. Mm. As opposed to like, let's just take one piece at a time. And let's just start. Maybe we start with biochemistry and get on a testosterone boosting regimen and start something like that. That could be pretty simple for you that you're incorporating into your life.
It's quite funny because most of my family are born in March, and my theory is that they mate in summer when the weather's hotter and there's more sun. Therefore, testosterone goes up, libido goes up, they become healthier, and then they start mating. Pretty much my whole family, you know, is March. It's like March 5th, 4th, 5th, 5th, 6th, 6th, 11th, 13th, 16th, 16th. I mean, you know, it's almost like, wow, you know, something's going on here. So, I mean, I obviously chase the sun most of the year round and always try to have a natural tan. But I do notice that, you know, the level of sun that I have determines how clear my brain is and how high my libido is. And it's actually makes such a big difference. Obviously, I supplement with vitamin D if I don't leave the country for a month or whatever. But really, it makes such a difference being in the sun for, obviously, because sunlight sulfates basically converts our cholesterol into hormones, doesn't it? And testosterone being super important driver for men and their libido. So it's just funny, this correlation, and you made me think of it.
Yeah. Sun and good water. You know, I think of South America as like being so juicy, right? They got like sun, they got good water, they've got nature. Just getting fresh air, sun, and good water, those three things can actually make a big difference for the eros in your life, because eros is life force. And if you're in a place where there is a lot of life force, like look at Costa Rica and like all of the life. I mean, just at night, just hearing like the sounds and you wake up to like all the birds. It's like, there's just eros in the air there. And so where is eros? Put yourself in that place.
So can you tell us how we can become more attuned to our bodies through yoga, meditation, and tantra?
I think the first thing is just awareness. I always say, if I'm going to teach one tool to make sex better, it is awareness. And Tantra teaches us how to be present with our body. And the tools that Tantra uses are tools such as breath, paying attention to your breath. For some of you, that may not be the key in. For some of you, it is. It's just like, can I just sit and watch my breath and notice what's happening in my body as I'm breathing? Breath in, breath out, breath in, breath out. Something as simple as that. For some of us, it's going to be more movement. So are you moving your pelvis? How are you moving your pelvis? Is there flexibility? Can you undulate your spine, or have things gotten tense and tight there? That awareness of what's my body doing? How is it doing? and really tuning in. Even, you know, I'm sitting here doing this. I've been doing pelvic floor contractions most of this podcast. Nobody even knows. I mean, that's something that I do. You know, I'm sitting in traffic. I'll do pelvic floor contractions, just contract and relax the pelvic floor, bring awareness to the pelvic floor. Because how often are you bringing awareness to that area of the body?
It's funny because I had tight pelvic area for many years, and that caused prostate issues when I was younger. And I read a book called Headache in the Pelvis, which is all about this type of area of how to work those muscles, how to build those muscles, and how actually for guys that have had prostate issues, actually it's fantastic. So I recommend anyone that thinks that might be appropriate to them for in terms of their energy and that area. I really recommend the book, The Headache in the Pelvis.
Yeah, that's a great, great resource. And I think, again, it points back to tight muscles then affecting other things in the body. And this, we're not even aware half the times that we're squeezing our anus, you know, like that we're like so anally tense. And if we could just bring awareness to that area of the body and then just bring some relaxation to it and notice also what's happening in your jaw, because that's very in the base of your skull, because that can also correlate to what's happening in the pelvis. I notice oftentimes if my anal sphincter is tight, my jaw has tightened as well. And I've lost the deepening of my breath. Mm. So these tools of breath, movement, awareness, sound is another one that I think can bring more awareness to our body, because sound resonates. Our body is a resonator. And so humming, just bringing some vibration to your lips, can bring you more aware of this area of your body, which has all kinds of erogenous zones at your lips, your mouth, the roof of your mouth. The nose has erectile tissue. People don't even know this, but there's erectile tissue in your face as well.
So finally, can you share one piece of actionable advice for the followers that can work on right away to improve their sex lives, other than, of course, reading your book?
I think the very first thing, a very first actionable step besides reading the book, taking the quiz, all of those things, is to start to look at what's happening when you're having an orgasm. And just become aware in that moment, because I think most of us are more unconscious to what's happening. And how are you having an orgasm? Are you tensing your body as you're having an orgasm? Are you relaxed when you're having an orgasm? Are you holding your breath? Are you breathing? And once you notice what you do, to start to play with it a little. So for example, if you hold your breath in order to have an orgasm, next time you're approaching orgasm, take a deep breath in through your whole body and see how breath starts to affect it. So just start to tinker and play with what your norm is, because the norm eventually becomes a rut that becomes a grave in our sex lives. And a way to innovate is just to know what your norm is and tinker, play with it, play with your sexuality.
Amazing advice. Love it. I mean, as you said that, you know, what do you do during orgasm? I'm just like, I'm thinking. I mean, I'm going to have to be conscious of it next time. So, well, Jaya, thank you so much for your time today. I've loved every minute of it. I'm really, really happy that we recorded together today. So thank you for joining me on the Health Optimization Podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. A massive thank you to my guest, Jaya. Learn more about Jaya at missjaya.com and check out her new book, Your Blueprint for Pleasure. You've been listening to the Health Optimization Podcast. I'm Tim Gray. If you're watching on YouTube, comment and leave the video a thumbs up if you enjoyed it, and subscribe to see more. You can also find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all the usual places you like to listen. Check out the show description for extra information and the links. See you next time. And remember, let's spread the health. Thank you, Bioptimizers, for supporting this podcast. Go to our show notes for details about how Magnesium Breakthrough can help you get to sleep and better manage your stress.
This podcast is produced by OG Podcasts. Find out more at ogpodcasts.co.uk.